Whether we listen with aloof amusement to the dreamlike mumbo-jumbo of some red-eyed witch doctor of the Congo, or read with cultivated rapture thin translations from the sonnets of the mystic Lao Tse, crack the hard nutshell of an argument of Aquinas, or catch suddenly the shining meaning of a bizarre Eskimo fairy tale, it will be always the one shape-shifting yet marvelously constant story that we find, together with a persistent suggestion of more to be experienced than will ever be known or told. Throughout the inhabited world, in all times and under every circumstance, the myths of man have flourished, and they have been the living inspiration of whatever else may have appeared out of the activities of the human body and mind. It would not be too much to say that myth is the secret opening through which the inexhaustible energies of the cosmos pour into human cultural manifestation. Religions, philosophies, arts, the social forms of primitive and historic man, prime discoveries in science and technology, the very dreams that blister sleep, boil up from the magic ring of myth. The wonder is that the characteristic ability to touch and inspire deep creative centers dwells in the smallest nursery fairy tale, as the flavor of the ocean is contained in a droplet, or the whole mystery of life within the egg of a flea. For the symbols of mythology are not manufactured. They cannot be ordered, invented, or permanently suppressed. They are spontaneous productions of the psyche, and each bears within it, undamaged, the germ power of its source. What is the secret of the timeless vision? From what profundity of mind does it derive? Why is mythology everywhere the same beneath its varieties of costume? And what does it teach?
Anyways, let's talk about your piece in the Sink book. I mean, what initially gave you the idea that the whole George Bush thing fit in so good with the entire journey through the tarot?
I guess a lot of people have connected the High Priestess card to the World Trade Center. I think maybe Jake did that. I'm not really sure who originally did that.
Right.
And then you see Saddam, of course, being the hanged man. And so once you have these two, like, signifiers, you just kind of see how it all fits into place. And if we were to assume, of course, that there's a monolithic Illuminati conspiracy to control everything, why did they make George Bush the president? Why did they make this absolute idiot that everyone hates into the leader of the free world? And the only explanation is that he's supposed to be the fool, right?
Right. See,
and then if you take that into consideration, then everything fits into place again.
The entire journey through the thing, though, do you think it, I mean, because like we were just talking about how we can do it with cinema and everything, these are like current events that lead one or at least drop one into this like fantasy, you know, daydream that all of these events have been meticulously planned. But if it's not that, if it is the universe kind of using George Bush as the fool, what would that imply? I mean, what would the universe be trying to teach us? I mean, what have you learned off of this little exercise of yours?
Exactly what's written in the book, basically. There's been a fall, and we'll have to collect ourselves back together, essentially, by working through the tarot archetypes. As a form of release.
So I mean, what is the Tarot to you?
A guidebook to alchemy, essentially.
And what is alchemy?
How general should I get here? the process of sexual sublimation, I guess.
Wow.
It's a tantric kind of thing, basically. It's the same thing as the Eastern tantric kind of
sexual energy,
right? And raising that up, and transforming that, and using that as the alchemical fire of transformation,
right?
And that's really what everything's about, you know. It's all about sex.
It's all about sex. Well, we were just talking about that. We just lost a bunch of this. But, I mean, the sexual drive, is the overabundance of sexual promiscuity, like, in media, is that a good thing, though, as far as, like, rising kundalini energy, like, on the mass populace? I mean...
Well, in India, they've got these temples with all these sexual symbols out in the front of the buildings. You know that? Where it's like the profane would just see the symbols out in the front and get distracted by them. But, you know, the people who really want to know the truth will ignore the symbols or realize that they're metaphorical and then just walk into the temple and not get distracted by them on the outside. And so that's sort of what we have in popular culture, where those who still want to be in this outer realm can do that, but those who want to change their lives will move beyond that into the inner court of the temple.
You know,
not sure that makes any sense.
That usually that's the top of the goal, is the one step that goes beyond the fundamental separation of male and female, like above sex. So, I mean...
Through sex, above sex.
Right, like the rising, the hermaphroditic realm, the androgynous, I guess, is the best word for it. What about the people who think that androgyny is like a bad thing, or is that just like a natural fear of ours?
Yeah, I don't see any real problem. That it just seems like a strange phobia without any real basis other than being a reactionary.
All right.
It's really just more about awakening into a state of love, I guess.
You
it's
said,
all just a metaphor.
Okay, so, I mean, you said that Waite was one of your heroes, and you said that the tarot is basically like this, what would you say, like guidebook to rising one's sexual energy?
Yes.
Did Waite explain it in that way?
Yes, he did, if you read his books. He's got a book on the Zohar where he does talk about that. And if you look at his other books, they're all about alchemy. And that sort of thing. Alchemy, Freemasonry, the same thing. They're a good read.
They're a good read. I mean, how many
and Manly P. Hall talks about the same thing.
Who? Manly P. Manly P.
Manly P.
Yeah, I've listened to a shitload of them.
Manly Palace.
Is that one of your heroes as well?
I've read so much of him, just the Secret Teachings book.
Oh, yeah, I've read just about that whole entire thing. And then there's America, like the history, the secret history of America. I read that one.
Oh, yeah, that too.
And then I listened to a bunch. I mean, there's like hundreds and hundreds of hours. But I never really heard him talk. I mean, he talked about mythology and stuff, but I was slightly disappointed about his about cards. I mean, like, the whole history of cards and...
Yeah, his cards chapter is kind of lacking in that book, in the Secret Teachings book.
Oh, so you agree. But, I mean, how does the tarot, as far as, like, how does it its relationship to cards? Do you think that there's some kind of, like, I don't know, luck energy? I mean, the same basic thing that a tarot would work with regular cards, right? Like, people say it's in the cards for you or whatnot. It's... How does that relate to actual gambling?
I don't know. There's this whole play on words with the word divination, where on one level, divination is like this fortune-telling thing where you use the cards to predict the future. But at the same time, divination also means to divinize, to become divine. And so that's the initiatory meaning behind the word divination as applied to the tarot. But as to gambling, I don't know.
Do you think that, like, rising your kundalini energy and stuff like that makes you function at a like, higher harmonic to the universe? I mean, do you find yourself moving through life easier?
Yes, sort of. But then there's the shadow battle that comes into it. where you have to kind of kill the old self. And because there's a war between these two principles, the fire principle and the lead principle, that's the two forms of Osiris. And so remove the lead, that's what the alchemists say. So you get kind of divided against yourself. That's the whole
thing
in
Harry
Potter.
That would be the heavy aspect stuff, right? What's weighing
you.
You've
got to kind of burn away all of the psychic impurities. And then that's the great work, you know, chipping away at the block.
Impurities.
And that's the whole Harry Potter mythos.
Go ahead.
Well, that's the whole Harry Potter mythos where he has to fight Voldemort.
The evil shadow aspect of himself?
Right. And so in order to fight Voldemort, he has to kill himself, of course.
You know, we totally missed out on the Leo conversation. I mean, that's the same thing, though, right? The dead girl. I mean, what is your definition as far as, like, the dead girl symbolism? What is that? Is that the? I mean, how does that relate to the anima, I guess?
It's the hanged man, essentially. I'm not sure if you read that part of the book, of my chapter in the book. But
your chapter is long. Yours is real long, so I only got about halfway through it. So
okay, well, look at the hanged man. That's the explanation for the dead girl. It's like the primordial death of God at the beginning of the universe.
Right.
And so I'm not sure if you saw the new Mask of God post, but that's what's repeated in that again, where you see the girl die at the beginning. She's crucified on the cross of the four elements.
Okay.
She falls into matter. That's at the beginning of time. And that's the Tikkun Olam, where God is fragmented into pieces. And so now we're here to pick up the pieces and put her back together.
Right, so it's all for the benefit of the anima. Like, but see, I've been thinking about this, and I'm reading K. Dick, and you know K. Dick's scattered with the same themes. He has mm-hmm. something in there talking about, like, how the, you know, there's going to be a critical mass because the anima is made up of all dead, right? It's like the Akashic Record or the storing of all the magnetic going-ons in an individual's life. And so the more people who die, the bigger and more complex the overall field until it basically, you know, interjects into the consciousness of the individuals. It's a more organic theme of his Valis concept.
You're talking about the world soul now?
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
The anima mundi?
Right.
And that's what Plato also said, like the world soul was crucified in the heavens in the shape of an X, which was then transported into our Christian mythos in a somewhat veiled form.
And then kind of resurrected again, pun intended, through the Rosicrucians, how they had the rose symbolizing the soul coming out of the cross.
Right, exactly. The rose of the heart.
Right.
And so then we have a fragment of the world soul in our hearts in the shape of an X as well.
Right. So what do you... What does the heart have to do with the soul?
Everything. The heart is the center of the soul. And everything in alchemy is really about reawakening the heart. And that's really our problem here, is that we're kind of dead inside. And there's no love in this universe. And that's really the dead girl. Like, love has been killed, and so we're going to have to get her back, you know? And who would disagree with that?
It's still eerie, man, because those Leos, that's three pops in a row with that dead girl symbolism is very potent and very...
Yes.
It's very interesting. You can sit down and watch all three of those in a row, and it will give you an overarching, like, complex...
Which three are you talking about?
Oh, well, I'm talking about Revolutionary Road, Inception, and Shutter Island.
Okay, I need to watch Revolutionary Road. I didn't see that one.
It's just interesting because it's Kate Winslet and... It's Kate Winslet and Leo, so it's a continuation kind of Titanic.
Okay, I definitely need to watch that. I've been doing Titanic a lot lately.
Yeah, and see, it even has Kathy Bates in it. You know how Kathy Bates is like the connection point for Kate and Leo and Titanic. She serves as another connection point for them moving into their house. And the reason it's called Revolutionary Road is because that's their home. And then, I mean, you'll understand it. Do you want me to ruin it for you, or does it matter?
No, I'll watch it today, tomorrow, sometime.
Okay, cool. And then you'll understand what I'm saying, because it's the same themes carry through. But I don't know. It's just weird to me, because it's like, is the universe trying to tell us something? I mean, what is the universe trying to do?
Yeah, it definitely is. And remember, in Inception, you know, Maul falls to her death again. So it's like the primordial fall of God into matter again. And that's kind of what you see on the first degree Masonic tracing board, with the angels coming down to Earth on the checkerboard floor. So it's all just kind of recording this kind of primordial event.
But it does seem to be ramping up. I mean, do you think that we're coming to some kind of head here, or is it about to the point be made to a larger group of people?
Maybe so.
You're still on the fence as far as like 2012 and all of its stigma goes?
Well, I don't know. I mean, are you guys looking for the rapture or what?
What?
Are you just looking for like more
think rapture?
Think rapture. Or are we just looking for like a heightened state of awareness here?
I don't know. Wouldn't they both be the same thing? Like I was talking about the Philip K. Dick aspect of it being pushed to the tipping point where all of a sudden the unconscious is made aware of through a downloading of info, like everybody having a similar experience that K. Dick did at the same time.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that's the only way it's going to happen. But at the same time, people have to kind of take the initiative and change their own lives. Which is really how it would have to happen. I mean, you know, not wait for an external savior to come by.
Right, of course. But I don't know. I've thought of, like, that's what Dick called himself, and he called himself the Buddha. I mean, what if it's just, like, a Buddhahood for a large amount of people?
But maybe so.
This just goes back to scripture as far as the gospel goes on Jesus and how I said every man is, you can do what I do, and so forth and so on. I don't know.
Right, exactly. You have to strap yourself to the cross and go through the whole self-sacrifice thing.
Do you think it's inevitable? I mean, do you think that every person who's already lived have gone through this? It's impossible. Do you believe in reincarnation, Jason? I mean, what is, studying all this esoterics, I mean, do you have a philosophy of life? Are you atheist? What's going on?
I'm divided in the subject. According to the esotericists, the soul will experience a sort of dissolution on death and potentially reincarnate. Like the individual ego, like the egoic mind, the natural mind, can't escape from the system. And that's what's going on in the third chapter of John, where, you know, Jesus tells Nicodemus that in order to get to experience the kingdom, he has to be born again, because nothing can ascend to heaven except that which came down from heaven. That's the important part. And then, of course, the other key line is, as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so must the Son of Man be lifted up. So what he's saying is, there's only a certain part of you that can escape from the wheel of Dharma and escape from the world system, which is, you know, the serpent part, the Kundalini part again, which is the divine part locked inside oneself. So, reincarnation, I don't know. Essentially, it doesn't matter. But I don't know. On one level, we're just a bunch of monkeys. You know? But,
I don't
but
know.
There's a way out of being a monkey. And, you know, becoming a real boy. It's the Pinocchio story again. He's just a block of wood. But if he goes on the journey and rescues his father from the belly of the whale, then, and you know, again, there's the alchemical symbolism here as well, where of course he has to light a fire in order to escape from the belly
of
the whale.
Oh, yes, he has to, in the belly of the beast, he has to light a fire.
Yes, and so there's the alchemy again.
And once
and that's
fire, oh, wow, that is so brilliant. But see, that's I like how the Tin Man has the Tin Man symbolism has
yes
projected
the
that
Tin Man needs
so
a heart.
fucking brilliantly. Go ahead.
The Tin Man needs a heart. That's our whole problem here. We
right.
need to find a heart.
Right.
And then that's kind of your Jupiter. The problem with looking to Jupiter for answers is if the Tin Man is Jupiter, if he's the father, he's the mind. The mind needs to be enlightened by the heart.
Right. It's an extension of Jupiter. It's going further, though. I mean, like, some people get stuck saying, oh, Jupiter is this and that, but he's, like, continually to evolve through the symbolism. So the myths that come out today are just as important as the ones that came out in the day when, you know, people were actually going to Jupiter temples and whatnot. Now, see, I just love it because it's the heart, like you said, the wakening up, the focusing in on a center soul in the body. But my friend, actually, he was having therapy one time, and his therapist told him something about his stomach, like focus in on his stomach and find out, feel, like if you have any tangles or gas or whatever, you know, the feelings that don't feel quite right in your stomach, focus in on them and, like, become aware of them. And he became more aware of his thoughts, and he started to feel like almost an energy ball in his stomach. And I kind of stole it from him and started using it in my meditation and stuff. And there's a definite, mm-hmm. you can feel, it's like bringing your consciousness down to your center and out of your head. Like we're so stuck up in our head thinking that, you know, that what the brain is recording is what we identify with. And you can pull
right.
your consciousness out into your center, the center of your being. And it, like, releases your thought. You start seeing your brain as actually a tool and not like a household.
Right. It's really all about moving the centers of consciousness from, like, the head and the genitals into a center point in the heart. Because you're kind of divided against yourself right now. Or we kind of are, and not just you.
I like the way the Pinocchio, I know I do that too. My friends always get mad because I always say, you know, you need to do this or you need to do that. Why are you telling me what to do? I'm like, no, you as like in general, us as a people, you, us. Anyways, you mentioned the Tin Man, as far as Pinocchio goes, I've seen a lot. What's interesting.
And that's Blade Runner too.
Yeah, which is K. Dick again. Well, there's the movie AI, because that's almost an exact replica of Pinocchio's story. And then I saw Short Circuit 2 not too long ago, and there's that point where he goes through the library and peels through all the info, and there's two books that he has, Frankenstein and he has Pinocchio. And what's really cool about it is he has Frankenstein bound in red in his left hand and Pinocchio bound in blue in his right hand. But it has to go down with the whole pillars in the Kabbalah Tree of Life, where one side is the mercy seat, one side is the judgment seat, and what lies in between them is the heart chakra, the Christ chakra, or
yes,
the one
Sephiroth,
that connects
right?
All, right, the one that connects all of it.
Right, all of the different Sephiroth go into Tifereth, the heart center.
And I like also how the card that that goes between the path, aligned with tarot is the strength card, which is
the strength card it's using the beast, the primal libido to feed into beauty and to transform that into you know, love.
Motivation, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then again, in AI, he's looking for his dead mother again.
Right.
There's always a dead girl somewhere.
Yeah.
Have you guys noticed this? I don't know why I'm the only one who notices this.
What's that?
Have you guys been noticing this theme with the dead girls everywhere?
Oh man, Ella, that's a big trip for me right now. I just went through and watched all the Leo, and I knew it was there before the Leo, but. I mean, the Maul's name is Shade, or on the movie poster it says Shade. And then we were talking about the Hangman too, which makes me think of Heath Ledger in Batman, The Dark Knight, how he hangs upside down, and in Shutter Island it's Heath Ledger's wife who's Leo's girl, which I found.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the actor.
Leo's always kind of a hanged man too, with all the water.
That's a good point.
All dying in water.
There's a ton. Yeah, I noticed that even before I was into esoteric. I always said the movie The Beach was him washing up after the Titanic and stuff, but it has continued. I mean, with Inception, and then there's that first shot in Shutter Island. The first thing you see is him throwing up, going, "That's a lot of water." Like,
yeah,
it's really, really weird. Really, really, really weird. It just looks so blatantly. And the thing that's interesting to me too is the focus on the language, like how he's introduced to the fact that the names that he was using were just mixed up. And there's even that presentation that Ben Kingsley, or what's his name?
Ben Kingsley.
Ben Kingsley.
He's Dr. Crowley, though, in the movie,
yeah,
which is pretty significant as well.
Aleister Crowley, and he's teaching him how to manipulate language.
Yeah.
That is of the utmost importance, I think, because you were talking about the great work, and then you have Gurdjieff and Korzynski and all of these individuals who are telling us that our reality was our language. And there's a certain amount of manipulation of language going on right now as far as pop culture symbolism too, wouldn't you say?
Maybe. Give me an example.
The E's and shit like that.
The what?
The flips of the E's and the.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't know. You're right. I'm sure.
You really.
This is more of a Kyle Hunt thing.
Huh?
I guess.
More Kyle Hunt thing.
This is more of a Kyle Hunt thing.
That is a true statement. That is a true statement. Oh, what does the symbolism have to do with your own meaning, though? I mean, do you think that there's different perspectives that can be gathered here, or is there just basically one alchemical path that everyone needs to walk down?
My viewpoint would be that there's one path, there's one truth. Other people might disagree. I don't know. I can only report what I see and what I find, and I keep seeing the same thing over and over. I keep seeing the same archetypes. I keep seeing the same tarot sequence repeated over and over again. So all I can report on is what I have been perceiving, which is that it's a universal mythos. Now, that's why I'm always wondering exactly what other people see, what other people are perceiving, and how different that is, even though we're watching the same movies.
Right. I think that there's something we can all learn from each other. There's a certain amount of we're so easy to say, okay, this guy's full of shit. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But what I've
personally, I want there to be a truth.
Yeah, but I keep realizing that what I think is truth is not truth. I think it has more to do with a certain non-confidence in my own. Because, I mean, I watch the work that some people do, and I'm like, no, like, you're off. But then a couple of days later, it seems like I'm in a different frame of mind, and I'm like, oh, I get what they were trying to say.
Yeah, I get that a lot. I do that a lot.
So I can't ever say that it doesn't seem like a truth is attainable, because my own truth changes so often.
Right. But I got to keep fighting for it. Only way I can stay sane, I think.
Well, what is your main goal in doing this work? Are you driven to do it, or is there a certain thing that you're... Or is there a certain amount of... what's the discipline that you're instilling on yourself to keep studying this?
It's definitely one of those being trapped in the underworld kind of things, where there's only one way out. And that's kind of what Leo's doing in Inception as well. I mean, he's trapped in limbo. So the only way out is that he has to finish it. He's in too far. He's in over his head. He's in way too deep. And so he's got to finish the job. And that's a consistent theme. It's escaping from the underworld, essentially.
It's going down to the depths of the unconscious and then bringing something back, the old hero's
yes.
journey of Joseph Campbell again.
Yes, that's
and again,
it.
And again, and again, and again. And what is it? When does somebody know that they're done with the journey, though?
It's a lifetime work. I'm not sure that you can find a definite ending. There's always another mountain, right? I mean, I don't know. I'll tell you when I get there.
What do you think about Crowley?
He's great if you take him an initiative, and if you really see what he's trying to do. I mean, people don't really look past the surface of him. Mostly they just see him as, you know, a cheap wizard performing magic tricks and don't really see the the whole spiritual system that he's really developed. And that's kind of, have you seen like the fourth Harry Potter movie, Goblet of Fire, or read that book?
Yeah, I've done both.
I mean, yeah, and Crowley is a character in that movie, you know, like Mad-Eye Moody. That's Aleister Crowley.
Oh, that's cool. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, he looks just like him.
Yeah,
he looks
exactly
like Aleister Crowley. And, you know, he's got the all-seeing eye, the mad eye.
Oh, that's funny.
The illuminated eye. But there's a false Crowley, and that's the only one that Harry knows at first. But then once he looks past the surface and opens the box, it opens the seven locks on the box, then he finds the real Crowley inside of the box, and then he becomes a valuable ally. So he's got to look beneath the surface and against the scary exterior of, you know, the wickedest man in the world and find the real Crowley. So, I mean, J.K. Rowling is like a high wizard.
No shit, man.
Yeah.
What do you
she
think?
She knows
anything. I mean, how? She had to. Do you think that she was just a wife that was going to Starbucks and writing stories and doing
yeah,
a little bit of
like
research?
She's like a Hermione Granger type. She's read everything. She's definitely dedicated herself to reading all the occult literature. So she knows what she's writing.
Huh.
Yeah, she's very... She seems to be very intelligent.
No shit. See, I've often wondered about that. It's easy. It's easy to see stuff hidden in R.K. Rowling, but people just seem to not believe that it's anything less than just, you know,
because they're just stupid books for kids, right?
Yeah.
But of course they're not. She's writing a separate story for people who can look beneath the surface. And that's true for everything.
So, I mean, are you just going to keep on... are you going to keep on posting? Or is there some kind of other avenue of disseminating this information that you would like to take?
I don't have any other avenues I can think of.
You don't want to make a video or anything like that?
I could make a video. Right now I've been kind of... I'm lost in the video realm with these. I know I post too many YouTube videos, but I could definitely do like a video or something.
Are you thinking about dropping a book on the Sync Book Press?
Personally, no. I know that Doug said I should, but
yeah, he was just. I don't know.
What
you seem to be pretty fucking intelligent
see.
As far as like the education that you've given yourself through this stuff. You're pretty well. You're definitely well read, that's for sure, correct? I mean, what would keep you from actually trying to
Well, what sort of book should I write? I mean, that's
you ever thought about fiction? I mean,
you could either
do just exploration and you know, pop culture interpretation, or do you fancy yourself as a pop writer?
I don't know. I haven't really considered like what I would do for a book, so I don't. I mean, right now it's really just kind of a Dadaistic sort of repurposing popular culture and mixing it together. So to find that spark of originality is a whole separate thing altogether. I mean, really, I'd have to make like a comic book or something.
Yeah, see, that's a great idea.
Because who reads books? Nobody reads books.
I do all the time.
You haven't even read my book.
Huh?
You guys haven't read my book, so I don't know. I mean, I have to make a comic book or something to make it applicable.
What do you mean we haven't read your book?
You never read my chapter.
Huh?
You didn't read my chapter yet, did you?
No, not all of it. I mean, I started reading it, though. But that's because, like, I was, like, didn't even know I was going to be talking to
no,
you.
No, Doug hasn't read it either. It's
Doug
great.
Still hasn't read it? I read a little bit of it. I mean, it's just, I was already impressed because of the way that you laid it out. I mean, you're already talking from a point of view that, like, this is known. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to explain. It was real easy to understand. It was really accessible, and it wasn't, like, ego-ridden. You know what I mean? Where it's like, it was...
Yeah, I didn't even want to include a bio, really, but
I know, that was funny. The flask. Jason resides in a flask and is caressed by heavenly giants or some shit like that.
I forget. Yeah, so
I mean,
I don't
I can
know.
beat it. It's
I guess
right here.
comic books would really be
I mean,
the
are
way to
you a
go.
big avid? Most of your blog that I've read has involved comic books. With
Well,
Scott Pilgrim, like your assessment of Scott Pilgrim was astonishing.
he puts all of this esoteric stuff into this stupid video game comic, and it's really baffling. And so I just had to kind of point it out. And I mean, even the name, I mean, he's a pilgrim. And I don't know.
Jason
It's
lives in Erlenmeyer flask at the center of the earth, caressed by magnificent beast. He occasionally rises to the surface to write online under the name, how do you say it? ELF?
I don't know.
ELF?
LLF, I guess.
And then Cosmos Indicos is a certain phrase. I can't remember what it means. It's like
It means the
the
visible world, I
invisible.
think.
I thought it
The
meant
visible world.
the visible. Yeah, that which can be conceived or something like that, or the initial conception or something. I can't remember. How did you get involved in the community? I mean, what avenue, who was your first contact and whatnot?
I think Alan and Doug
Did
were
they
the
just
first
pick up on
ones
your
to.
did they pick up on your blog, or was there?
Yeah, that's basically it.
Okay. Wow, and the coincidence that you live so close to Doug is uncanny in my opinion. Only a few blocks away, is that correct?
Yeah, we also lived in the same neighborhood in Seattle.
Bizarre.
Strangely enough.
Yeah,
Yeah.
way bizarre. So you guys ever think about doing some kind of presentation or something like that, like out there, as far as like maybe sitting people out in an audience while you explain to them certain concepts that you've discovered?
Personally, I don't really know what I would do for that either, so I haven't really thought about it.
Oh, okay. So you like to
I
keep a
mean,
low
I,
profile, for sure.
like the what?
You like to keep a low profile for sure, huh?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm just not sure what my audience is or what they want from me. So I usually just write for myself, you know. Or I write for my past self, and because
that's
that's the only one I think would be interested in reading. Right.
cool, your past self. Good concept. All right, well, look, I mean, I apologize for the first 15 minutes not being recorded, man. You have to forgive me on
It's
that.
perfectly good.
I think that we got a little bit out of here, and I'd like to talk to you again, like on a real, like whole day to sit out. Doug and I finish reading your chapter, and we can really like explore this. But enjoy your journey through the tarot today, if you don't mind me saying.
All right, thank you.
No problem. Have a good night.
The problem's all inside your head, she said to me. The answer's easy if we take it logically. I'd like to help you in your struggle to be free. There must be 50 ways to leave your lover. She said it's really not my habit to intrude. Furthermore, I hope my meaning won't be lost or misconstrued. But I repeat myself at the risk of being rude. There must be 50 ways to leave your lover.
Good morning, sir.
50 ways
Hi.
to leave your lover.
Hello.
How are you?
I am good. So, what's first on the list?
What's that?
What is on the list today?
What is on the docket? Oh, nothing. I just wanted to chit chat. So, what did you think of Revolutionary Road?
Very interesting. Especially when you think it was Inception, where in both of those movies you've got the wife as kind of the initiator of Leo DiCaprio.
Yeah,
Who's trying
she's
to push
also
him to take
like
that
she's
leap?
also the bad dream. Did you notice that the concept of the dreams coming through and on the source of the dead wife was the source of the bad dreams in both Inception and in Revolutionary Road.
Right, and I like that they're the Wheeler family, and at the beginning, like Kate Winslet is trapped in this bad play. So it's kind of like, again, there's this whole thing where they're trapped in a movie. Or like there's Wheeler families that are trapped on the wheel of Dharma.
Oh.
And they have to escape. And so Kate Winslet in the movie is really trying to get him to break out of his comfort zone here and take that leap of faith that Maul was also trying to get him to do. And really,
you know what else I noticed, and I don't know why, is the connection with Paris too. Because it's inspiring to go to Paris and Revolutionary Road, and yet in the majority of the story takes place in Paris and Inception.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, it definitely sinks really hard, though. And it's interesting also the way that Kate Winslet dies is another, like, creation story, where she has this abortion, and then she kind of bleeds onto the rug, which we could take as being like a Gnostic creation myth, where in the Gnostic story, Sophia has an abortion to create the universe and kind of bleeds into it in exactly the same way that Kate Winslet dies in this movie. So again, it's kind of like replicating like a primordial event, but in space and time. So pretty kind of mind-blowing that they would put that in this little suburban movie.
Yeah. Actually, it's from a book, and I guess that when I looked at the production, the production notes said they kept it really close to the book. It's interesting because in Shutter Island, there's that scene where the mother has blood all over her hands. It's in a dream, actually, but she's set up and almost bleeding, just like Kate Winslet is when she's bleeding on the carpet in Revolutionary Road. There's a lot of the dead girl is also the baby killer, kind of Lilith-like.
Yes. Where she kind of, I don't know, smothers his consciousness, I guess.
Yeah, I see it as the Anima Mundi, like the world soul. Is that the same way that you interpret it?
Yeah, that's how I interpreted it in Revolutionary Road, definitely, where it's the creation of the world. Allegorically depicted with Sophia having this abortion.
So what does that mean? What is the aborted baby?
The world is the aborted baby because it's only half formed, and so it needs to be kind of brought into perfection, because as it is, it's just kind of this half formed shadow of reality. If that makes any sense.
And what does this have to do with sex? Yeah, I was thinking, you've got me thinking a lot about sexual energy and orgon energy based on your comments that you made last time. And I was reading, I didn't get through, your section in the book is probably the flagship of the book, I think, because it's really well set up and really informative, but it's also extremely long. But it keeps hinting back at sexual energy, like how this all has to do with, I mean, you mentioned...
Right.
In the examples, when you mentioned Han Solo is one of the ones that I remember, you made it Han Solo, and it had to do with the sexual energy represented in the beast of Chewbacca and the Millennium Falcon as the Eon of Horus, which is all just kind of like a little mind-blowing packet of info. But, I mean, what does this all have to do with sex? Because the Revolutionary Road, there's the attention to sex as well.
Yes, I mean, the males can't perform. That's the thing in that.
He's impotent.
They don't, right, they don't last at all.
They don't,
I mean, they're not in control of their energies either in that movie.
So, I mean, are you a practicing, like, sex magician? Is that what you're trying to do?
I wouldn't call it sex magic. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. What did you think of the symbolism in Interstate 60? Because there's a lot of kind of sexuated things in that movie.
Yeah, the whole
thing
where the girl's trying to get into his pants.
Yes.
And Gary Oldman's face. Go ahead.
She says that she's had sex with 2460 men. And he looks at that, that's like 24 hours of the clock, and then in a day, and then 60 minutes in a day.
60 minutes in an hour.
Time. She represents like time and sex and death. And so to progress in the interstate of Interstate 60, he's going to have to.
Right.
Like
interstate. It's the interstate.
Yeah, so he's not going to have to go down that that road of lust and sex, but to go down this different road. And so that there's this whole kind of hinted at the symbolism in the film. And
yeah, he makes a comment of, you know, how much easier life would be if you didn't have to think about sex or something along those lines.
Right.
You didn't have to worry about sex.
Yeah, so with the whole box that you have to transport from one place to another kind of sexual.
Yeah, that translates over to the movie The Box, too, because we're talking about James Marsden.
Yes.
I like how you made that analogy, too, for the two movies are almost a continuation of each other.
Yeah, they're like the flip side of each other, and we see that a lot with...
Oh, yeah, another example of it would be Kate Winslet, actually, because I noticed... Well, I think Jake was the one who made the connection of Iris. So
uh-huh.
Kate Winslet shows the different colored hairdos in... Eternal Sunshine for the Spotless Mind, which is another, you know, dealing with the dream girl type, the dream dead girl. But she's also got the rainbow, like, intersecting her face in Never Never Land, which mm-hmm. is also, once again, a dead girl. Kind of the corpse bride, because that has to do with Johnny Depp. And then in the movie Revolutionary Road, when she's in the play, she's standing next to the gentleman with the 42 shirt on.
Yes, the 42 shirt.
Right, which is the degree that the light reflects through the rainbow, so it's the rainbow again. She's in a movie called Iris, and she actually is Irish. I just watched this movie called The Holiday with Jack Black and Kate Winslet and Cameron Diaz. Which is interesting because Cameron Diaz is from The Box, and Jude Law, and in that movie, Kate Winslet is named Iris as well. Wow, that's an interesting little clump of actors and actresses right there that intersect. It's cool.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a true thing there. As to the explanation for it, I'm not sure if I can give you the latest one.
I'm not asking for one. No, it's not. It doesn't. It's a lot of people say that Sync is kind of like just 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon or whatever, and it is in a certain aspect. But that's one of the things that I get a kick out of is how actors reverse roles. Do you know what I mean? Like what we were just talking about, James Marsden and stuff, but we were just talking about Jack Black. He's one of the most interesting ones because he becomes King Kong in Gulliver's Travels, but before he, was the one who trapped King Kong. But I wanted to ask you about, you said something, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay, in this new post, they kind of made the thing where, like, the Jesus character is also always the John character. And so in Constantine, it's like JC, played by Keanu Reeves, but he's also John Constantine. And then in The Last Temptation of Christ, Willem Dafoe is Jesus. But then in the movie Autofocus, of course, he plays John Carpenter.
Oh, nice.
And so there's always that kind of dual role with the Jesus character.
Right. Another good example would be Keanu Reeves... being the son of the devil and the devil's advocate, and then almost giving birth to the devil's son in Constantine.
Yes.
And going to hell and being the savior. But it's just not a direct line. It's kind of like hinted at. You know what I mean? It's kind of like you have to blur your vision to see it. Well, you were talking about Harry Potter, man, and you said something earlier to me. There seems to be like a whole bunch of like subplots that have esoteric meaning in Harry Potter.
Oh yeah, everything. These are the most esoterically rich books you'll ever read, man. they're like a complete primer in the occult.
You mentioned the giant scene in the last book to me one time.
Yeah.
And what it represented.
Yeah, it's kind of like he's trying to transform this titanic nature into something that can be
the recruiting giants. I remember now. Yeah. It's the part where Hagrid, because the whole troll, there's one book and movie, it's been a while since I've been into him, but it deals with that little troll, which is like Hagrid's brother, I think. Is that correct?
Yeah, Groff.
Yeah.
Groff is his name.
And then Hagrid disappears for a second trying to recruit giants.
Yes, and then it's like he's stolen fire from heaven, sort of. He's like Prometheus trying to transform these root creatures into gods, essentially, which is like another... But like everything in the book is kind of an alchemical metaphor, so this just kind of plays into the main storyline where Harry's trying to transform lead into gold and all that. And so they have the whole thing with Hagrid trying to bring these, civilize these giants that are, you know, wild and untamed. It's kind of a metaphor for taming one's own animal nature and all of that. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. What about, are you familiar with Philip K. Dick?
Yeah.
I mean, and you know what King Felix is?
Yeah.
Now, see,
the happy king.
The happy king or the lucky king. Right, Felix means luck, but how that has to do with the Felix Felixis that Harry takes in, what is that, the Half-Blood Prince, I think?
Yeah.
See, the thing that's interesting is I always, Jupiter is known for being the one to benefit, the beneficiary, and he's the god of luck, kind of, right?
Yeah,
so
Wheel of Fortune.
Right, the Wheel of Fortune, and Jupiter rest over that card. See, the thing that interests me, though, is how K. Dick became obsessed with, he kind of became obsessed with this concept of a savior, and I kind of assimilate it to Jupiter, but I also, I've knocked that down to Harry Potter, too, because of his lightning bolt scar. It's kind of a lightning bolt birthmark.
But you know what that lightning bolt scar means? Have you read that part?
The lightning bolt scar is from Voldemort, right? Where he tries to kill Harry. It's where the spell hits him.
But it's the scar from the original lightning flash of the descending logos on the Tree of Life.
Right.
Originally led to the death of God.
Right.
And so that's why Harry's parents died when he got the lightning flash scar.
But you see what I mean, how it also assimilates him to being like a son of Jupiter, though, because all of the other...
Yeah, and like Dumbledore is basically Jupiter.
Yeah, okay.
And so he's kind of like Dumbledore's surrogate son. So, yeah.
Have you seen Rise of the Apes yet?
No, I didn't see that one.
It's interesting because in that one, there's a monkey called Julius Caesar. They name him Caesar based off of the history of the Planet of the Apes. They renamed a lot of the characters the same names as characters that have come up through the whole franchise of Planet of the Apes. But his name's Caesar, and he's has like this immaculate conception. Nobody knows that his mom's pregnant until after they have him. And then he has a birthmark on him, okay? And he basically is, they were experimenting with his mom, so he learns how to talk. But when he's in the cage, the individual who is keeping him in the cage is the same actor who played Malfoy in Harry Potter.
Yeah, I heard that. That's definitely one of those things. And he calls him a stupid monkey, right? And prods him with his magic wand. Is that what you say?
Yeah. He has like a cattle prod that he hits. So it serves the same purpose as Malfoy's wand. But Caesar, I looked up Caesar. Caesar means Harry. So it's like... It's not necessarily, it's like a continuation of the same savior or the one who evolves the human race. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. You seem right on that. There's definitely a connection there.
Do you think that all of this, I mean, all of these kind of esoteric path working that we see in movies is somehow, it obviously has a purpose, right? So is it evolving us? I mean, is there something going on here as far as, like, acceleration?
It's a sign to point out what has to happen to Pendulum himself. It's not something where you can, where I don't think it's something where you can just watch a movie and become enlightened. It has to be a pointer back to something that happens within himself. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I've just been reading K. Dick's exegesis, and he basically says that they're like triggers that actually disinhibit our ego, so we do what we're supposed to do, kind of like programming, but it's like God's programming. How do you feel about
right.
that idea, that thought? I mean, what is the purpose? Yeah, I mean, symbols. Symbols are God's programming. How does the universe use symbols?
It's a grand allegory meant to point back to this doctrine of alchemical rebirth that really has to be done to repair the universe. I guess that's a good weapon.
Well, this goes back to the question on whether or not you're like a practicing alchemist or mystic or
yeah,
sex
sure.
magician.
Only if you write all this stuff on in the book, I mean, you kind of assume that you'd be practicing it.
I didn't catch that.
Well, you would have to kind of assume that I'd be practicing what I preach.
Well, I don't assume anything anymore. I mean, some people just write, but they don't seem to... You seem to be one of those few individuals where you kind of see behind the surface of it, which is good. You seem to be pretty well read. And there's only, I mean, some people just kind of regurgitate facts and step away. It seems to be
right.
that you're, I don't know. You're kind of tight-lipped on what the hell it all means, but I think that that's just because you haven't really determined yet.
So you were asking about, what I'm saying is all this symbolism is pointing back to this this alchemical rebirth that is kind of written about in my book. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Does that simplify things?
Yeah.
So just by watching the movie, you can't be transformed.
Then
it
what is its purpose?
Reminder.
I mean, isn't it supposed to be doing something to you? Is it just for inspiration's sake? Or?
It's the outer church. I mean, if you go to church, you watch the guy, the priest, administering the Eucharist ceremony, but this is just a symbolic action. You have to realize that it's only a symbol. That's Joseph Campbell's thing with the masks of God on our little blog there. And so you just have to realize it's just an outer symbol. The transformation occurs elsewhere. You'll have to be your own savior.
Okay. No, I've seen The Dead Girl too. I mean, I was pretty obsessed with the whole Leo thing because I think it's a blatant, like, pretty vivid one. There's other things that have to do with France too, if I can seem to remember them. He's the King of France and the Man in the Iron Mask.
His name's Frank in this movie.
He wins his ticket to... You remember when they're going through his sketchbook, he was talking about... Old Paris, how he was just coming from Paris.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, there's more of them.
And then in Romeo and Juliet, Juliet is going to wed Paris.
She's going to wed Paris. That's a good point. Yeah,
so
I didn't think
I
about
that
one. No, that's a great point. I didn't even think about that one.
But that Paris guy was exactly like the guy she's going to. That Kate Winslet is going to marry in Titanic, of course. And they're like the same story, Romeo and Juliet and Titanic.
Yeah, the Romeo and Juliet are almost the exact same. And they have that fish tank scene where it has water with...
Yeah, where he kind of like symbolic seeing her underwater kind of thing. And there's a lot of Mary symbolism in there as well. Like there's like a shot of like the Virgin Mary in almost every scene in that movie.
Oh, Catch Me If You Can, they make a whole point out of how his mom and dad met in Paris.
Yeah. Where are we going with this?
I don't know. I was just pointing out the whole Paris thing. I really don't understand what it means, though. Sometimes they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, so anyway, I guess what I was saying is that, like, the woman's kind of like this initiatory high priestess kind of figure, even if she's dead. So, like, having, like, Leo watch her death is, like, part of his initiation. in itself, because she demonstrates the mystery of self-sacrifice before he will have to experience it himself. And then that's been a big theme of these movies lately on the Master God. So like in Revolutionary Road, she's trying to really push him out of his comfort zone here and get him to pursue his true will, his destiny. But since he won't do that, you know, she's got to really force him by demonstrating the creation of the universe again. And so on. Then, of course, in Inception, with Maul falling to the desk and then asking Neo to come with him, but he has to fall too. I jump, you jump, right?
What's that?
They both have to jump.
Right, okay, I see. There's an interesting crossover between Ellen Page and all of this, too. I mean, she actually played Juno, but she's in that movie Peacock. Have you seen that?
Yes, I saw that movie.
But it has the same dead mother. It's the dead girl connotation.
Yeah, the guy is haunted by his dead mother, and he's got this feminine side that kind of represents his personal anima figure.
Right.
It's like it's from his feminine twin.
And that's played by Celine Murphy, who also is in Inception with both Paige and Leo.
Exactly. And in Inception, he's kind of like this Christ figure. But then in Peacock, he plays John. That's his name. So that, again, there's this duality with like John and Jesus being the same person.
John the Baptist and Jesus Christ?
Right.
Jesus Christ. Huh.
And there's also a train in that movie as well, thinking of Inception. Like the whole thing starts with
train. The train derails and falls into her yard.
So it's like
it starts the whole story of fate. Like
yeah. There's a train of thought that really sets him off of his comfort zone.
Right. That's a good point. That's a very good point. That's cool. I dig it. It just seems so strange. I mean, it's those pops right in a row, Inception, Shutter Island, and Revolutionary Road all being made within months of each other and all basically like carrying this whole package of a message. He's with Gangs of New York is with Cameron Diaz. What, the box, is Cameron Diaz the Anima Monday in the box?
She's a personal anima. I mean, he's like James Marsden's anima.
And once again, that has to do with the mother and like almost trying to decide on whether or not to kill the child.
Right. And he's like trapped in darkness again, just kind of like a symbolical drowning. In that movie, he's blinded. He's like this Christ child figure again. And he's been kind of blinded, and he's in a bathtub, so he's in water again.
All right, man. All right. Well, that was a... Let's keep going for 5 more minutes, and then that way it will be another half hour, and then I'll just mix it together.
Okay, Yeah, Cameron Diaz is really this like Pandora figure with the box. And there's a whole legend with Pandora that kind of mirrors the plot of the box almost exactly.
Well, the box has weird stuff in it because of the words no exit.
Yes, it's like they're trapped in like this council purgatory. Which is kind of like what a lot of these other movies are about, like where Dom Cobb gets trapped in limbo, of course. And then in Peacock, Cillian Murphy's kind of trapped in his house. And he can't get out of the house.
Oh, yeah.
And then that's Revolutionary Road, too, where they're trapped in the house. Trapped in this underworld.
Yeah, trapped in the life that they don't want.
Yeah.
And they can't get out unless the kid is killed. No exit. That's interesting. That's fucked up.
So,
of course, the kid, the child is seen there in Peacock too, through Ellen Page's baby.
Yeah, again, Ellen Page has a baby again, like with the daughter.
Right, and she's trying to get out. He's trying to help her leave.
Yeah, so she has to escape from the system, the closed system represented by the house of death. And it's kind of like setting the daughter in the son of the mother kind of thing. Like she's again like the replacement for this specter of the dead mother. Just as an Inception.
As a movie in and of itself, what do you think of Inception?
Great. Yeah, it really seems to keep coming up
a lot, a
fruitful think story.
All right, well, let's check on your mic here for a second, man. The sound sounds totally different than it did last week. Are you on something different, or is there...
No, I'm on this Android tablet. I don't know. I don't really even know where the microphone is.
Talk for me.
Hey. Okay, that's, I'm talking here.
That's a little better. Okay. Let me think. Back to Harry Potter. What was her purpose in making it then? Was she really just trying to make a star, or is it or a story, or is this like some kind of like mass initiation?
It seems like a mass initiation, but yeah. I mean, the wealth of symbolism in these books is really something. But it's kind of like people just eat this stuff up if you put it into a story. Like because they're kind of like on a subconscious level they're really hungry for this stuff. But if you just tell them they're not going to read it. But if you like couch it in these mythological terms and make like this entertaining story out of the full alchemical mythos, and it's really a ticket to the big time.
So is that what you like would want to do in the long term, or the long term as yourself? You know what I'm saying? Like you mentioned that you wanted to make a comic book.
I'm not sure I necessarily want to make one, but if I did make some sort of artwork, I would make a comic book. But I don't really know what I would make for a comic book at the moment. Does that make
what
sense?
If somebody gave you a story? Like what if I had a story and I just wanted you to like. Esoterically, like spice it up.
And I'm sure it could be done pretty easily, but usually people will. That's the thing. People will usually work in the, usually put this stuff into the stories, whether or not they're actually conscious of it.
Right.
Which is kind of a mind bender every time.
Yeah, but don't you think that it's in? Like you said, I mean, it would work best if you intentionally like knew what you were doing.
Oh yeah.
So you would write a story freehand first off, and then you would go back and rewrite it with your head, like. It would probably work best with two people as well. Like one person would write just a clean story, and then somebody else would come back and basically add or detract from the way that the archetype would want.
Yeah, you can kind of see that with the way that a lot of movie adaptations of books are done, where the movie adaptation will add a lot of symbolism that isn't in the book. That will really heighten the esoteric meaning behind it. You seem to see that a lot.
That'd be based off the trans... Well, no, it would be based off of what the media calls for, because you can't actually visualize something. I'm reading Ian Fleming, and I see how he handles symbolism. Like how you would handle symbolism in a movie is by putting something behind an actor that has, you know, some kind of symbolic representation of the idea you want to get across. In the book, Ian Fleming says the whole book's about, it's called You Only Live Twice. The whole thing's about death. Like, he's going to kill somebody who's got this garden of death. The whole garden is made out of poisonous stuff. And while they're on their way traveling there, like one morning they wake up and they eat hamlets. And then he goes, in parentheses, a ham omelet. But I realized that the reason he's doing that is because of Hamlet to be or not to be, which is the whole question of death, to live or to die, or do you know what I'm saying? So, like the symbolism, once you figured out the key, you could really kind of pick apart what he was trying to say. So it's just a different way of hiding yourself. Because it's based off of what the actual media you're using demands, visual, because all basically movies are is like a mix between the telegraph and the moving picture. It relays the same information. Sorry, that's kind of... I got that from Neil Postman. He's an analyst, like a media analyst, and he kind of said that. And it, you know, the way that TV has progressed, it's not the most trustworthy thing on the planet because, you know, we haven't had a fat or bald president since TV started. And that all has to do with the picture. Like, what we see is more determined on the actual ability of the candidate. Sorry, I'm rambling.
Yes, absolutely.
Anyways, thanks a lot, man. I just wanted to kind of give you a little bit more of an opportunity. I felt really bad about that mistake of mine the other day. So this thing sometimes records and sometimes not. Huh?
I don't think I said anything important anyway.
Bullshit. Jason, you're like brilliant, man.
Thanks, man. Like, you guys are pretty awake. So if you guys maybe aren't interested in it, I'm not sure who else is interested in this stuff.
Well, I think
that... I'm not sure what my audience is.
Well, I think that, like you said, I mean, like, people are hungry for this stuff, whether they know it or not.
Yeah, so it's like, if you write a story, a fictional story, like Harry Potter, they're just gonna, it'll be huge, but if you just give them the naked truth, they maybe aren't interested in...
I got a story, man. I got, like, this, I had this grand, it's a comic book style story with, like, superheroes and shit like that, but it deals with outer space. I mean, it's all intricate, and I've had it in my head. I tried to write it, and it folded. Like, I lost the computer information. So I got, like, a story, but it's just a matter of, like, actually sitting down and making it. What blew my mind was after I made it, I looked back, and then it had, like, Lilith is one of the main characters. I thought I was being totally original by having, like, this vampire lady who goes around and drinks virgin baby's blood. And then later on, that was a long time ago. And then when I got into sync and stuff, I realized that was Lilith. And I'm like, oh, shit. Like, and then the more I dig, the more I realized that every single one of these characters that I had, and I had, like, this grand parade of characters, they were all, like, somehow... esoterically speaking, significant. So I think that, I don't know, like, in my opinion, it's the next offshoot from the sync practice. Like, making your own fiction is probably the best thing to do. And I think that there's a high potential of it becoming as big as Harry Potter and stuff like that. It's just a question of what audience you want to go for as far as, like, teenage or not necessarily, like, who would be interested in the stuff, but, like, if you want to go for the kids, which would be Harry Potter's audience, or a more adult audience, I think is the only decision that needs to be made. I know how to keep it pop, though. I mean, you have to keep it somehow hidden. That's what makes people so crazy about it, is something to figure out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's what they were doing with the Matrix, of course. So all those, you know, whiz-bang, gunfight scenes to really keep the kids happy. But it's also... you know, an esoteric story.
All right, I got to get ready, man, and get out the door, but thanks for talking to me. The sound was a little bit funky on here, but I'll do the best I can with what I got, all right?
All right, have a good day.
All right, talk to you soon, Jason. Thanks for everything. Peace.
Peace.